Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And to all of our listeners. We want to do a special episode where we talk mainly about the last decade of Apple, which a lot of podcasts like ours will do. But we
and
also
you don't get many opportunities to talk about the decade.
That's true. It only comes every 10 years.
It literally comes one in every X years.
That's right. But we want to begin by not just a recap of the year and the big stories and what they meant to us, but also just our history with Apple products because of our age and because of access to Apple products throughout our life. It happened to kind of coincide with the beginning of the decade. And so I guess mine is a little bit before, but not by much. And yours is about there, too. So, what I wanted to do before we get to the stories about, the decade as a whole for Apple stories is talk about every, major Apple product category and sort of what our first memory of our experience with that category is, if we had it or not, and, what we recall about it. So, first off, so your timeline begins in 2009. Mine is about a year or two before that. So my first iPod is what I want to talk about. And it was the fourth generation iPod Touch. And if you recall, that was the one after the third gen with the little short fat one. This is the tall, skinny one. Yeah, the iPod Nano, not Touch. And so it's the tall, like a 2-inch diagonal screen. And it's like taller than it is wide, which is like a big redesign of the iPod Nano. And
was that the year when it had the camera on the back, or had they not added the camera yet?
Hadn't added the camera yet.
Okay.
I don't think so. But you could do video. Because the camera, wasn't it just video and not photos?
Yeah, so there was that. Yeah. So there was I'm pretty sure there was a model that didn't have any camera at all, and then there was a model with a video camera.
Yeah, we're gonna be doing a lot of this recollection stuff, but yeah, it was the model before the camera. I didn't have the camera version, but it was a birthday present. I think I turned 17 or 16. It was whatever year the fourth generation was out and available in the newest one, and it was literally my very first Apple product because I knew about the Mac. We had access to iMacs at my high school. And, I had seen the original iMac when my granddad was looking for a computer, in the early 2000s and didn't get that one, but I thought it was neat because of the way it looked. And so finally I had my own Apple product for the first time in my life and synced music to it. That was honestly probably from CDs that I ripped, and bought them from like the CD store in the mall near where I lived. And I had always been huge into carrying around a CD player. Whenever, MP3 players were a thing, I had a ton of the knockoff cheap ones and, they had terrible interfaces and everything. And it was not like an iPod, but it was in my, it was in a price range that my family could manage. And, so having an iPod Nano was a humongous deal for me because it's like, this is the real thing. It is not an imitation of the thing that I actually want. Yeah. And, I took it everywhere with me. I mean, and it was at the time, like, it's kind of the way I feel about the Apple Watch now, which is just like, wow, technology has moved quickly because I'd gone from carrying CD players that skip whenever you hit a vibration, and, I had experience with the cassette players and a Sony boombox that I had. And so I have memories of recording the radio broadcast onto cassette so I'd have something to listen to on demand, or playing something into the telephone answering machine and then listening back to it as like a recording device. So having the iPod was a big deal. And it played videos because of that long screen, you turned it sideways and played videos on it. And I ripped a copy of Batman, the Dark Knight movie. And that was one of the movies I had on it. And I watched that entire movie on it all the time. Like, if I didn't want to listen to music, you couldn't do a whole lot of other things, I watched the Dark Knight on that thing, on a 2-inch diagonal screen, including at a wedding one time I went to. So
it's just incredible, like, because that all feeds into the do you remember for ages there was Jobs saying they were never going to make a video iPod because the screens would be too small and no one would watch anything on it.
Yeah.
And then they did. Then they kind of resentfully did the iPod photo that would only show your photos on the the 1.5-inch screen.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do any more than that. And then, you know, they caved and actually did the iPod video. And then obviously that proliferated to the Nano and everything else.
Yeah. So, yeah. That might have been my 18th birthday. I don't know. But it was whatever year the fourth one came out. But it was here. It was really big for me. And like, just to give you some examples of like, you know, how I admired Apple, you know, the world of Apple, but didn't have access to it is I had a tower PC that was like unbranded that I think was like built by someone else in the family. And I inherited eventually and like I spray painted the case of the tower and like made it all, you know, look neat and everything. And, you know, it ran Windows XP and, I had it skinned out to look like a Mac and have a dock launcher and everything. And, you know, that was the big thing. And I always looking for like a version of GarageBand for the Mac, like an equivalent version and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, actually having an iPod, like this is the real thing, using, probably the Safari browser for Windows at the time. And, you know, and obviously iTunes and iTunes, what, you know, at the time iTunes wasn't insane yet. It was like really good. So, on Windows. So that was a big deal for me. And that was, I think it was orange because I found a photo recently where I was like listing it for sale because I had the next, you know, thing that I got. But, what about for you for iPods?
Yeah. Like until only the last couple of years, I never had much interest in like music at all. It really was Apple Music that actually got me into the rhythm of listening to music on a regular basis anyway. I would never buy music really. I'd have like four albums.
It was like the opposite of me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like obviously when, you know, I was quite young at that time, but iPods were still a thing, right, in the world. And definitely some of my friends would have iPods and stuff. But I just never had that like affinity to music, really. So I never had any of the early iPods. And as a family, like I was the oldest child, and so my siblings, who you know would have happened to earn like a music a lot more than me, they were just too young to have, you know, expensive stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And iPods were considered expensive. And my parents they didn't have like Macs or anything. It was very like Windowsy. My like first ever interactions with Apple products really was like kind of a friend of ours down the road like would have a Mac, and he did like video production. It's crazy how like the decade changes the world. Like he would make videos that then he would record onto VHS and sell those. So he would do like the school party videos and then sell the videotapes.
Yeah,
right? Like,
yeah,
because this was like 2005, right, 2006, that time period. And he was like the first one that I ever knew who had an iPhone, and he had the old like Mac Pro. It might even be called the Power. It might have been the G5 at the time, yeah. Right? And so that was like and I remember going around there, and I would just like, he had a Cinema display, I'm pretty sure, and I would just watch like him use it, and I'd love it. But it was just always considered way out of the price bracket, right?
Sure,
it was never in the realm of any reality. I can remember very distinctly when he got. He must have got the developer beta of Leopard that had Spotlight in it, right?
Okay.
And I remember him doing Spotlight searches. I was like, wow, that's so cool. But that's like the earliest thing I can remember about any Apple product at all.
Yeah.
The iPod situation, we got as a family, our family's first Apple product was an iPod Shuffle, and it was probably the worst iPod of the entire range. It was the 2009 iPod Shuffle that didn't have any buttons.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got the sticker gum buttonless shuffle as our first purchased Apple product.
And that's the one where Steve Jobs like comes back the next year and is like, you know, we went to the previous design again.
We did it wrong. Yeah. Yeah, they literally just went back and put the buttons back. And
yeah.
Because it was the whole premise of this iPod Shuffle was, you don't need to play music on Shuffle. And if you wanted to switch playlists, it would speak to you each playlist in turn. And when it got to the one you wanted, you'd press the play button and it switched to it.
Yeah.
But of course, back then, it wasn't generating the audio in real time like what would happen with Siri, right? What would happen is you would select your music on iTunes on the computer. And when you synced the iPod, the iTunes app would generate all of the synthesized speech for every single like album and playlist and then save them onto the iPod with it.
Oh man.
So it was essentially just playing back music recordings of the trans of the speech attack, the text to speech audio.
That's so much work for a bad product.
Yeah. And it, and you know, like the bad voices that you would get on the Mac before like the Siri voices came around.
And if you do the Siri voice, like you change it without being on the internet, you know, it's very bad.
Yeah. Like that, that was the voice of this thing. It was, I don't know how we ended up. I think we, our family got it just because it was the cheapest and we were going away on holiday.
$50, right?
Yeah. Well, it might have been slightly more than that, actually. Okay. Because there was the 2 gig and the 4 gig. And I'm pretty sure we went the extra mile and got the extra 2 gigabytes. So I think it was like £70, which is about $80 probably.
Yeah.
For, you know, a buttonless thing that you had to charge and sync by plugging, because it didn't have the dock connector or anything. You had to plug in the headphone jack, and the other end of the headphone jack was a USB port.
Yep, I recall.
And it would charge it really, really slowly, and it would sync really, really slowly. But that was the first ever Apple product we owned. And after having like 2 years of longingly seeing this Mac being used and all these beautiful things flying around the screen, we ended up with an Apple product that had no screen at all and essentially no UI. It was kind of a downer.
Yeah. My experience, like my iPod, I was so impressed with, because I mean, it wasn't just this 2-inch screen. It was that it was also kind of rounded to the edges in the way that it was designed. It wasn't like boxy. It curved to the sides, and the screen had that same effect to it. At least the glass did. I don't know if the screen was really flat, but the glass was rounded like that. And it just made it seem so cool, like spacey and futuristic. Then the Shuffle was not that.
The Shuffle was, especially that Shuffle, it was like, I don't know. The Shuffle was very much price point centric, right? Mm-hmm. And it definitely helped Apple at the time. But if you just look at their product line today, they have nothing like that.
Like they have no interest in that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the cheapest of any product range is still a very, very, very good product compared to the purely buttonless, screenless Shuffle. Like the $329 iPad, right? It's the cheapest iPad you can buy, but it's, you know, still an iPad, close enough. It's not like they have like an iPhone that doesn't have a touchscreen, or it just has like a static display, right? Like those kind of weird segments, they just don't have any, you know, they don't have any need to be in at all in the modern world. But back then, Apple was a much smaller company, and if they wanted to grow the market, that's kind of what they had to do.
Yeah, iPod was the big thing, and through it was, you know, it was a long period. It was a period where there was only one iPhone each year and one screen size each year, and then there were always like clues from Tim Cook that, you know, it's like if the market gets mature enough for the iPhone that we think there needs to be different versions of it, then that would be interesting. but zoom backwards, and it's like that's what they were doing with the iPod. It was a big enough mature market that they needed to have different models for different segments of the market. And that was a flop, because the year after they returned to it. Remember the lanyards for the iPod Shuffles?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a student at my school who wore one all the time, like everywhere.
It was an era for sure.
Yeah.
And after the Shuffle, obviously our family used the Shuffle, but it's not like we were overwhelmed by it or super impressed by it, because it was the basic model and it barely didn't do anything, right? I think somehow a family friend had decided they didn't want their iPod Touch anymore, and they sold it to us like secondhand.
Yeah.
And so my next Apple product in the whole family was a 2008 second gen iPod Touch that we took possession of in like mid 2010.
Yeah. But it's still a leap forward because of what you came from.
Yeah.
Even if it's late 2 years.
Yeah. And I can remember, and that was the time when you had to pay for iOS updates for the iPod Touch. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure I remember like campaigning my parents, "Can we please pay for this update?" I can't even remember what feature added, because it wasn't like the iPhones. You didn't get all the features. It was like so stripped down.
Yes,
you got very, very.
You didn't
very
get the same apps thing. Even.
Yeah, and like I think the dock was different. Like you'd have the dock design would be different between the iPhone and the iPod. Like,
well, you had the music app always on the iPod, and then it was the iPod app on iPhone.
Yeah. Because you didn't have the iPod app on the iPod. You had the iPod app on the iPhone.
Yeah, because it was in iPod.
Yeah, until like iOS 5, I think, when they swapped it around.
Oh man.
But even beyond that, it was like even basic things like the design of the dock was like a lesser version just because you're on the iPod Touch. Uh-huh. It was like not as pretty. It was really weird.
And couldn't handle the real dock.
Yeah. And they made you pay for it. And I could update to iOS 4 on the second gen iPod Touch. But I distinctly remember you couldn't have custom wallpaper because that was one of the big features of iOS 4 in that year was that you could have a wallpaper behind your icons. It wasn't just black. But the second gen Touch wasn't powerful enough, or they just didn't let it have a wallpaper. And I don't think it could do multitasking either, which was the other iOS 4 thing. I can't even remember why we got updated it. I think we updated it to use the iBooks app, maybe. It was like, it's just that whole like last paragraph is just so incompatible with the modern world of like every update's free. Basically every device gets every feature nowadays. Like back then it was so much more stratified of like, if you had a slightly older version, you'd cut off half the features. Like famously the 3GS even didn't get custom wallpaper backgrounds or whatever, or the iPhone 3G didn't get wallpaper backgrounds.
Yep. My second Apple product ever, so going from the iPod Nano fourth generation, is whatever iPod Touch came out that was on the market and given out for free in 2009, because it came with my first Mac, which I'll get into later. But it was one of those discounts. It was one of those deals where I was going to college for the, you know, as a freshman student, and you buy the Mac with a discount, and it was at a Best Buy because I did not live near an Apple store, and came with the iPod Touch, and like that, and I was I sold the iPod Nano. And because I was in college and needed money, and I had an Android phone that was like an HTC Hero, and it had a little spinning ball thing on it, and it was really tiny. But I mainly used the iPod Touch except for like texting and phone calls, because I was on campus with Wi-Fi everywhere, and it was way faster and way nicer and everything, you know. The HTC thing ran, it wasn't Android, it was Windows phone, Windows mobile. So it had a start menu and everything. So the iPod Touch was like, this is like my Mac experience, but portable, you know, and there's Wi-Fi on campus everywhere. So it's like, you know, in that regard, a portable computer, you know, so, in between that, I think maybe it was the first iPod Touch, but my younger sister had received that for Christmas. And I just remember like, I'm way older, and for my birthday, like it's only about me, I get the iPod Nano. And it was probably because that's what I requested. Like that's the only reason. And then if I would have requested the iPod Touch, like maybe I would have gotten that. But I think it was for Christmas that she requested the iPod Touch. And I think it was the first generation one with John Lennon in the box. And it was like a really nice box. But because all of her friends had the iPod Touch, then that was what she needed. And, you know, I was always like ashamed to ask for anything, you know, so but I remember that. And so when I finally got one as a, like, you know, for free with the MacBook, you know, that was huge for me. It's like, you know, and they took that promotion and they changed it over the years to be free gift cards for iTunes or the App Store, or Beats headphones. And I'm not sure of how that would have affected me the same way, but I mean, having like literally free hardware that's really good, you know, it hit me in a big way, in a good way.
Yeah, well, when I got my first Mac was the fall of 2010, and I did not get a free Apple Touch.
Oh, no.
I bought it on the student discount thing. And obviously you get the percentage off the hardware. At the time, the UK would give you extended warranty. So you actually got 3 years of AppleCare instead of the normal 1 year warranty. And I got, I think, a £70 gift voucher for the App Store.
Okay.
Wow. I think that's what it was in 2010.
Yeah.
Because I remember buying, and again, you ended up spending that gift voucher on Apple software because you had to buy iWork, right?
Yeah.
So I had to buy Pages, and I bought Numbers, and I bought Keynote, and however expensive they were at the time. And I timed my purchase of this 2010 21.5-inch iMac so that I'd get iLife 11 for free. Because as we were talking about in a minute, the iPad really was where I started like following Apple super closely, even though I didn't get the first iPad, but that's when I started following like the rumor mill stuff. And so I knew iLife 11 was coming out soon.
Yeah.
And I'd finally convinced my parents that I'd be allowed to get my own computer for Christmas, even though we got it slightly before Christmas, but essentially my Christmas present. And that was going to be the iMac, the entry level. I think it was Core i3 2010 iMac.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I still have it behind me today.
Oh, cool.
I have it sitting behind me, unused. Although, a couple of years ago, we did actually use it. Was still used by the family for certain stuff, but it's just sitting there behind me. And I timed the purchase so that I bought it after the October Apple event where they announced iLife 11, but iLife 11 wasn't out yet. And so when I got my Mac, it came with like this redemption code so you could get iLife 11 for free. And that was like saving $50 or whatever. So I was like, quids in. It's great. Like you could spend like $100 just on iLife and iWork easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now it's all free and built into the iOS.
I mean, like you, I paid for the software update, for the iPod Touch software update, or iPod Touch OS at the time. Like this is before iOS is the name, and it's you've got iPhone OS, or what is it called? iPhone OS. And
that's I think they called it iPhone OS. Even
yeah. It just ran on the iPod. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
because the iPad OS originally was iPhone OS 3.2. That was the first version they did because they had iPhone OS 3.2 before iOS 4 came out in the summer. So the iPad originally shipped with iPhone OS 3.2. So I'm pretty sure the iPod Touches would also be iPhone OS like 3.1 or whatever.
Yeah. And I think I paid about $15 for that just because it made my product better. And it was a free product anyway. So I still have it in my mind of like my memory of like looking at the terms and conditions and, you know.
Yeah, you can remember pressing the accept button on the iTunes thing because you'd have to buy it and then it would download the firmware to the little iTunes download window.
Yeah, this is way different than today. And then that first Mac that I had, you know, again, like I was brought up with computers. My step-granddad was a math professor at a local state college. And his employers made him get online because that's where, you know, work email and grade books and everything were going. And so that's why we had to go out on computer shopping. And I saw that original iMac like on like a flyer, you know, on a window, and then got exposed to computers because he had one at home. And then I had somehow inherited like my step great grandma's. Like that weird PC that I had, and it was really bad. Like I don't know the specs on that; it was so bad. But then, in my city, there was a McDonald's building that was under renovation, and when it reopened, they had a grand opening, and I was the first customer inside. And then I was, I kept the receipt for a little while, like 0001 or whatever. And then I was the first customer at the window because I had forgot something that I was picking up for the family. I had to like go back and get it. So, and they had a giveaway and I was the first person to enter it and it was for a free laptop. And it was
did you win?
I won. It was for a Compaq laptop. It's probably valued at like $500 or $700, you know, then. But it was huge. Like that was a really big deal. You know, before that, I had a laptop that my, I don't even know the brand anymore, but it was a laptop, but it was purchased on eBay and my grandparents had bought it for me for school, but the battery quickly gave out on it. And it was one of those things where it just never replaced the battery. And so it always ran, connected to the wall. And for Christmas one year, I requested the adapter for the car to be able to plug up the computer to the charger and the outlet in the car, like, you know. And so having that Compaq was like, oh, a laptop that works as a laptop, like this is huge. And that was my computer. And then when I was going to college, so I'd graduated high school, had bought a car, I was working, was making the payments on the car, so I was kind of broke even though I was working. And My grandparents at the time, so I was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi at the University of Southern Mississippi, and my grandparents were in Delray Beach, Florida, and they were helping me out with getting ready for school. And so the Mac was required for journalism classes because of just a few classes that needed iMovie. And I wasn't even taking the classes that year, but I just needed, you know, as part of the program. And so the MacBook Pro 13 inch had just come out. My girlfriend at the time, she got a Mac earlier in the year. And so the choice was between the white MacBook, you know, polycarbonate body, or the aluminum MacBook with the silver body. And I was convinced, I was like an Apple fan. I didn't have anything but the iPod Nano, but I was like, you got to get that white one because that looks really cool. It's white. And this other one looks like too like businessy, and you know, you don't want that silver one. But then she got her parents bought her the silver one because it was like better specs and everything. And then my roommate in college had that same one. This is the 2008 MacBook Pro or MacBook before it's called Pro, but it's still aluminum body. And then my roommate in college had that same computer. And then I had bought mine a month after they had made the MacBook Pro 13 inch with like an SD card slot and some differences on for the IO. But it was like, it was one of those moments where on that day when I woke up, I had no idea that I would be in possession of a Mac, you know, by the end of the day. But I was like, you know, walking around Best Buy in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, where I lived, and, you know, in communication with my grandma, and she was, and so I think it was like, they have like, it was because of the education, you know, discount and free iPod that I was like, I think we should look at maybe buying now and not later, you know, and she was like, okay. And so I went up to the counter and I said, this is the one that I want to get. And then is it possible for her to pay over the phone by credit card, from Florida? And they're like, yeah, no problem. So, which we didn't even know if it was going to be allowed. And, you know, and it's way before like, you know, retailers had good online systems, even the Apple Store. They were pretty late on that. And so I handed my phone to the person at Best Buy, and like, she just gave her billing information over the phone. He put it in manually. And then I got to walk out with the MacBook, and it was just like one of those magic moments of just like, oh man, like, you know, and that really pushed me into like, you know, now I've got the computer that I've wanted for years. I've got the real GarageBand, and I was obsessed with just like recording guitar and using all the loops and like just making, I was all I did that first year of college really in my spare time. And that later translates to learning how to do podcast editing and recording and taking my GarageBand skills and putting them in Logic, you know? And it really helped, you know, but that alone, like taking that journalism program, requiring a MacBook, and then like that all put me on the path to where we are today with 9to5 Mac. Like otherwise it wouldn't have happened. And we'll talk about iPhones in a minute, but for me it was that the Gizmodo iPhone 4 leak, you know, where they found it in a bar and this is what it looks like before it comes out, and it's like radically different than the other iPhones. And I knew about the iPhone before that, but it just wasn't like, it was not a thing that I saw in the wild. I remember seeing it one time on a flight to see my grandparents in South Florida, and like some person in business class had one. And I was like, whoa, you know, and that's like the 2007. That was just neat to see. Okay. I didn't know about blogs and technology blogs and all that kind of stuff, you know, but, there it was. And so that led me to like finding CNET, and they had a bunch of video podcasts, and that got me like really into this sort of world. And I was working in college and high school at Sears, which is a retailer that's nearly gone now. Like every building I've worked in is gone now for Sears. but from finding CNET that way, they had TV reviews, and this is like way before I knew about John Siracusa, you know, and like his TV reviews and criteria. But the CNET reviews were really good because I was selling TVs at Sears, and you know, you had the cards for like what they were and the different features, but you know, having a review to sort of rely on made me just way smarter than everybody else there, you know? And then I'd see those, and I'd see all the other Apple news come up and stuff. And so then it was like the iPad rumor season before the first one comes around. So,
that's where it started.
Yeah. All right there. Yeah.
And I will say this, the launch, the boot process for that first iMac that I bought, well, that I had, I'll never forget that. Like, that was when they had the cool videos when you first turned them on for the first time. It would play the incredible keyboard soundtrack. It'd have, like, the space warp field. It would say, welcome. It'd say, bienvenue. It'd say, hola. You know, all those different languages. And then it would end with, like, the X of OS X. And
yeah.
It's kind of a shame they got rid of those intro videos. But that, like, I'll never forget. That was so cool.
Yeah, hello in every different language you can think of, and the music that plays, and then it's like, take your picture, you know, for your account and everything.
Yeah, that was so good, because the music would, like, keep playing whilst you were doing the setup, so it would, like, fade you into it, like an L cut. That was so good.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's neat. That now... In this sort of, well, let's see. So we'll kind of go by timeline. I think so there's Mac. Slightly before I got the Mac. No, this is after, because this is the MacBook for me is 2009 fall. Somewhere along the way, I got an Apple TV that was the 720p second generation.
Okay, so not the one that ran Tiger.
Yeah, not the big like Mac Mini looking one.
Right. So that came out in September of 2010.
Yeah. And so, okay. So, yeah. That's before an iPhone for me. Got the Apple TV second generation. And just because, like, I was watching keynotes by then, you know, and it was in the keynote. So I wanted it and didn't know what it did really. I had no iTunes purchases. It was nothing about that. It was just like, oh, here's a new Apple thing. And it's in my price range. I think that was the big deal. It was like, what was it, $100 or so?
Yeah. So, it must have been $99. And it was like a quarter of the size of the old one. Because it had no internal storage. Like the original Apple TV, it would have like a hard drive and you would like sync files to the Apple TV. And then the second one, they just went like, you just stream everything, you rent everything. Like that was, because that was the same day they announced like 99 cent TV show rentals, right?
And AirPlay too, right? But AirPlay TOO.
AirPlay original. That was, they did AirPrint in that same event. They did Game Center, like come out in that same event. So much stuff happened in that event. Like, and AirPlay is really gone from strength to strength from that original September 2010 announcement.
Yeah, and there was a version of AirPlay before it was called AirPlay, right? Do you remember what that was called?
AirTunes, because it only streamed to speakers, and that was introduced with AirPort Express.
AirTunes, like iTunes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then AirPlay, it was, now you've got video. So I purchased that with my own money because I had a paycheck, and it was a $99 Apple product, which, you know, again, like, iPods were more than that, unless you got the bad shuffles, and you know, it was like getting in this ecosystem now. And I still had an Android phone by then, or I had a non-iPhone. I had a Samsung Galaxy S1 Showcase was the name of that, and I had it skinned out like an iPhone, you know. But the fourth generation Apple TV, or no, for me the second generation, I remember like taking it out of the box and then. I didn't even like set it up yet. I just like put it in my pocket and it was just so small. And I remember like driving out and getting fast food with my roommate. And it was just like, we were in the drive-thru and he's getting like Taco Bell. And I'm telling him, I'm like, that person has no idea what's in my pocket. It's like not even anything incredible. And it's like, it can fit in my pocket, you know? So it's neat to look at like our perspectives at the time too. You know, that's part of this whole thing. And then I did get the 1080p Apple TV and sold the 720p version whenever the new one came out. And it sold for like a lot of money because I think they were jailbreakable whenever the new ones were not. And, you know, plus it was 1080p. I knew about TV resolution because of my Sears job, but not because of like content that I had. So
did you not have the original iPad then?
Didn't have the original iPad. I didn't have the original Apple TV, but I later acquired that by someone at the Apple store where I worked, and they gave it to me for free. It was cool. iPad, I was reading CNET, and, you know, an iPad is before the iPhone 4 stuff leaked. I've seen CNET before then, but I was seeing all the rumors and like the price guessing, you know, and I think there was the Wall Street Journal report from Walt Mossberg saying it's going to be $1,000, and like that's what he's hearing, and like the name Slate, and at this point like 9to5Mac is you know it's around, it's not what it is today, but it's a thing. I just wasn't in that world yet, and you know, but I do recall like the name Slate and thinking that sounds pretty cool. iSlate, that's pretty neat. I think there was like an HP product similarly named at the time, so it was weird, but like iPad was not what and it was like day one guesses or laughs at like the name iPad. Like it took a little while for that to like ease in and settle, you know, for people.
And the big iPod touch jokes.
Yeah, everyone said it's just a big iPod Touch, and there's nothing different about it. You just, you know, it's not a computer. You know, that's where the whole thing starts to begin. And
because obviously, so many people went into that event expecting like a Mac tablet. Right?
Those were the rumors. Like you show Lion. Yeah.
You'd show like a desktop.
Yeah, I guess you said Tiger.
Because that's what all the other tablets were. Like the HP Slate, I think, is what you're remembering. Mm-hmm. That was just like, it just ran Windows with a stylus or whatever. And it was
not well, but
that's what it was.
And, yeah.
You know, Apple changed the course of the tablet market by doing a big iPhone, essentially.
Right, yeah.
At a price point that was way lower than everyone expected.
And the reason people would say it's a big iPod Touch is because on the iPhone, you know, everyone had Sailor, but on the iPad it was an option to have Sailor. So and the versions that came out on day one were Wi-Fi only, not with Sailor, even though they were announced, and then they came out afterwards. So if you really wanted the cutting edge thing, you had to wait to get the better one by a few weeks or so. And you know, that's that was interesting. I never had one. It was definitely out of my price range at the time. Like the Apple TV, okay, $100, but an iPad, $500, yeah. not you know, I don't have that money at the time. And but a roommate in my dorm did, probably irresponsibly, but I remember he got the first iPad and he sold his MacBook because it's like, I don't need it anymore. It's just like the MacBook, and it was way too soon to do that. You know, now you can do that, but I, you know, you couldn't do it then.
I mean, the iPad shipped with 3.2, and that was before any sort of multitasking. Like, you'd press the home button, the app would completely quit.
Yeah. But I got to see his, you know, and I kind of felt like he was doing the wrong thing when he sold his computer. I think maybe to help pay for it, but I later fell into that trap a few times. But my actual first iPad was the iPad 2, not when it was brand new, but in 2011, I was working in the Apple store, and that included a discount. So suddenly, you know, I had a paycheck and a discount on it, and it was readily available. You know, the first iPad was hard to get at launch. It was always back ordered and nowhere near where I could buy it, you know, physically. So yeah. That made it easy to resist.
iPad 2 was my first iPad as well. Like, the iPad's definitely what got me glommed into the rumor space. I was, mm-hmm. I think I was like browsing Engadget and Gizmodo and stuff at the time. But I didn't, you know, I didn't have the money to buy the original iPad. I liked it. I thought it was really cool, but I didn't, you know, and that year my big present was the iMac that we, you know, we already mentioned.
Sure. So yeah.
Somehow I managed to wrangle getting the iPad 2. I either must have saved up my money, or it was probably like I put some towards it, and then it was some birthday money as well. Because my birthday was like, my birthday's February, and the iPad 2 came out like March. So it was probably a combo of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember being really happy that I'd waited. Well, not, I'd you know, waited by force, essentially. Not necessarily, but
it was such an enormous upgrade, yeah. Like year over year.
It was a big, so much design, thinner.
Like, yeah. And they would later, like produce
the complete side of the iPad. They like, yeah. It was one of the biggest year over year like changes for sure.
Mm-hmm. It was dual core. It was like there's now two computers inside. the original iPad demo is really good. You know, with Steve Jobs and sitting in the chair and just like really slowly demonstrating what you can do with this brand new thing that's in the world and all everyone paying attention to it, even if it's really basic things. And you know, and it felt like, wow, you can take the lid off your MacBook now, and that's all you need. You don't need the whole bottom half of it. Like, that's how it felt. But the iPad 2 keynote, I was totally tuned into that. And I recall Scott Forstall demoing Photo Booth, because now the iPad had a front-facing camera. And it's like, we can, with this dual-core processor, we can have all these live filters, you know, like, you know, you're in the middle and you've got, you know, 9 total showing your actual you know, face. It's like, yeah. That's never changed really since then. But, yeah. And GarageBand was a big deal of what you can do with GarageBand. And like, you know, the Beatles could have used this thing to record. So, but yeah, I had the white one. I don't know about you.
I had the black one. I don't think I've ever owned a white Apple product.
You know, I've owned plenty, and I still like them. But yeah, the It was also when the iPad 2 was around, that was the first time that they started doing smart covers.
The smart cover, yeah. I can remember getting the iPad and just like snapping and unsnapping this cover like a million times over.
Yep. I had a green one. It was like bright green.
Oh, and I remember. I had the ugliest color. I had the polyurethane gray one.
Oh, yeah. Which is now like the default for all the smart keyboard stuff.
Yeah. It was definitely an uglier gray, though. If you go back and look at that gray, it's the ugliest thing in the world. But the nice smart covers were the leather ones, and they were like twice the price.
So. Yeah. I bought one eventually, but not when I first bought the iPad. And I remember the iPad 2 came after the smart cover, but I was just so excited that I hung the smart cover on the fridge for like a week just to be like, this is what's coming. So there's this green rectangle on the fridge. And then, like the first smart covers, they were, if you got polyurethane, and by the way, like this, in this like era of Apple, coming from not the Apple world before that, polycarbonate for plastic, polyurethane for like this rubbery material. Like it was like learning vocabulary words for the first time because Apple would use them as like part of their, you know, Steve Jobs especially would use them as like, this is the quality of it. It's not what the other thing.
Yeah, because they didn't want to call it rubber.
Yeah. But yeah, they had the metal attachment. So it was a magnet and you know, it folded back into, I think like it had like four different areas before they went down to three. But it folded into a triangle. So it stood the iPad up so you could like FaceTime and watch stuff on it. Or you could use it flat and like use it as like an inclined prop for typing. But they had, you know, it was polyurethane or leather, and then they all had metal on there. And I think that like just wore away, damaged the iPad side, like left markings. So
yeah, because the magnets would attach like aggressively. Directly. Like, yeah, like come snap. In a rough zone and you go, click, you know, smack together. So you'd be smacking metal to metal like every single day.
Yep. And then I recall like the future versions, they would wrap the magnet up, and at least in the polyurethanes at first, and then I think eventually the leather ones caught up to that. But yeah, that was the thing. And you could wear those things out to where the polyurethane cover or leather cover would come off of the case, and it'd be like cardboard inside. You know, I guess it was cardboard, but it was like that visually. And it was really cool. Like, remember Evernote had an iPad smart cover specific app that was like flashcards.
And yeah, it was like you had to peek it and then.
Yeah.
And then you'd reveal and you'd see the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was neat, you know. And I guess the problem with that is that smart covers changed, you know, and you had to have a certain accessory to use that app. So, yeah. It was cool timing there. And so iPad was out before I had my first iPhone, but I got my first iPhone before I had an iPad. So it's kind of in the order of release, you know, for iPad to come first.
So you got an iPhone 4, but in 2011?
I got the white iPhone 4.
Wow.
On May the 4th, 2011. I remember because it's Star Wars Day, May the 4th be with you. And so it was like the very end of April, like the 27th or so, when the white one actually shipped. And at this point, it's, you know, iPhone 4 is almost a year old from the introduction, and iPhones get upgraded yearly, right?
Apart from amusingly that year.
Yeah, except for that year. And it helped that year because white kept getting delayed and delayed and delayed, and then it was finally out. And so it was like, if you saw the white iPhone 4, even though they had white iPhone 3GS models, sort of, they weren't like really, the front glass was white, right? Not the back. In this case, it was white on the front and the back, and it was this whole new design, the stainless steel, like around the border. So, it was really, or aluminum, I don't know, but it was really nice. And you could see a white one, and it was like the new iPhone for that year, even if it was not the new iPhone for that year. People knew it was, you know, it was new. And so that was my first iPhone. It was AT&T only. I switched to AT&T from the local carrier that I had that was called Sailor South, became C Spire eventually. And the reason for that was because I was moving to Florida from Mississippi, and it was massive roaming charges if you didn't live in the sort of tri-state area at the time. And so needed a different carrier, and the iPhone, white iPhone had just come out. And the craziest thing about all this is that the reason I had the money for, you know, I was still broke. I was in college still, and I was really going broke, you know, working part-time and, you know, paying my way through everything. And so there was a day, IHOP was giving away free pancakes, which when you're a free college student is invaluable. And I was turning right into the entrance of the parking lot for the IHOP, which is, I don't know if you have in the UK, but it's the International House of Pancakes.
Yeah, we don't have them. Surprisingly, yeah. That sounds very American.
Yeah. And so I was turning in the parking lot and the driveway and, parking lot. And so the road had a solid line on it, even though there was like space to drive in this sort of like turning lane. It wasn't a turning lane exactly. And so I waited until I got to the very entrance and I didn't treat it like a turning lane because it wasn't a dotted line. And when I turned, I didn't notice that there was a car in that not actually a turning lane. And, it hit me. So, my car was all dented up in the front, in the front where I was turning in, and they hit the front of me. And, it was another college student that had hit me, and like, you know, I had insurance and they had insurance and it was their fault. And, they had to pay for my damage, and it was really easy to deal with. But the damage, it was a dent, and I was a college student. It didn't matter what my car looked like to me, really. So, I got some quotes on like what it would cost to fix it. And I just, it was really at the time, like it wasn't very actionable. And so, I did get the quotes. So the insurance like processed all that, and I got a check in the mail for, I think around like $500, like what it would be for the repair to be done. And then I just never used it for that because it really wasn't that much of a priority. And like I was doing a bunch of different like life changes and things. And, I was like, I'm moving now. I need to switch carriers. I love Apple stuff, and this white one just came out. So this day where I was like, I'm going to use this money to buy that. And I remember I used it for partly to pay for the phone and everything. And I was, you know, brand new to having an account with AT&T, and I was a, you know, college student, and so. I had a massive deposit too to start the account. It was like $500. And so it was supposed to go toward that too. But then they never billed me for the deposit. And then, a year out from the deposit, you get a refund for the deposit because it's just to make sure that you're going to pay your bills and have the money. And, I got the refund and they actually had never billed me for the deposit. Like it just never came out of my account. And it was really weird. And so I went to an AT&T store and I said, I got this check and, I never actually paid for it. What do I do with it? And they're like, oh, well, we're not going to do anything with it. So just cash it. So I did. And, so it was all like this car hit me and then the iPhone was delayed and it came out. So it was like really shiny and new. But man, that was like having the MacBook was a big deal. Having the iPod Touch was a big deal. But like having the iPhone, like, that goes everywhere with you. And it includes what you had in the iPod Touch,
yeah.
Which included the main function of the iPod Nano. And it's like, this is cool. This is cool stuff.
Yeah. You were much further ahead on the iPhone train than I was. Like, my family got an iPhone 4S.
But I'm older though too. So.
Yeah. So my iPhone got 4S in late 2011, obviously, when it came out and it was Siri and stuff. But I didn't think they got it because it was Siri. It was just finally at a point where I think they wanted an iPhone that year. And I told them that there'd be a new one later in the year, and then eventually came out, so they just got it then. But they just didn't trust, like, I was still quite young at that time. They didn't trust me to like have an iPhone and then not break it or whatever. And because they hadn't had iPhones before, they wouldn't like hang me downs in the family that I could just have. So I had some really garish phones for a long time. I didn't get my personal iPhone until I started university when I got the 5S.
Wow.
5S.
Man.
Yeah, and that I think that was the same year I started writing for Nitro Mac as well.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that is true. That's the 2013 time.
Yeah.
Did you so you're a developer and you've got, you know, did you have any development experience before having the Mac, like with PCs or anything? And then did you have any development? Like, was there any overlap between, or was it what you've got the Mac and then it's way later when you've got the iPhone?
Yeah. So I had the iPad 2 and the iPad 3 in that time. So like that was kind of my where I'd spend my money. I would sell the iPad, then get the Retina iPad the next year.
Yeah,
yeah. Obviously, back then I was just doing like app development for fun, right? So it wasn't like I wasn't like depending on it, but that's actually when I made Binga Machine, was around that time frame, the 2012, 2011,
which you still sell today and make money from.
Which I still take today and make money from, incredibly. But before the Mac, I'd messed around with like PHP websites on Windows, like making some bad websites about stuff, which has, you know, minor interactivity, but it was literally the Mac when I downloaded Xcode and just randomly started trying to learn it. And I used iTunes U videos.
Mm-hmm.
And I just watched them for weeks on end.
Yeah.
Getting nowhere. And then somehow it clicked at some point, and then I started making Binga Machine. I think the first version of Binga Machine came out later in 2011. And I was just running it on my iPad and on the second gen iPod Touch.
Yeah.
Still had running around.
That's something. So yeah. Mac development came way later when you and I know each other.
And, yeah, I didn't start doing AppKit stuff till literally this year, really.
Yeah, because we had this Safari extension that we used in part for the show to collect links for the show notes from a bunch of tabs, and then Safari made it where you couldn't have that anymore as a Safari extension without an app, and so you made a full app for it, and then you had to learn.
And like me being like a proper like actually, you know, doing development for a job really only started in that first year of uni because I was bored of my actual course and I just started doing coding stuff. So that's like, that was when I first got my, like, actually in a very funny twist, before that, Mark Gurman actually paid me $300 to make some tiny app, like, in like 2012. I don't know what he was on. I don't know what he did with it, but I definitely made it some sort of like app for Gurman in 2012.
And was it his, like, You Are Rich app?
No.
So he had a version.
It was something to do with it would use the accelerometer and it would work out if you were walking or in the car. I don't know what he did with it. I need to ask him one of these days what he actually did with it.
That's right.
So that was when I didn't really know what I was doing. So he kind of, like, I don't even know if the app was very good, but I did make it. And then my first like serious like projects were like first year uni's kind of stuff. So that's kind of where it came in. So that would have been like 2013, 2014 timeframe.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And I think outside of those products, now we start like fast forwarding more to the modern era, right? Like of watch, that, because that's kind of the big new product category after the iPad, right?
Well, I do want to talk about our upgrade habits.
Okay.
So you jump on the iPhone train at 5S. I will tell you my iPhone possession as much as I can recall it. So I got the iPhone 4 late, right? It was almost a year old. That was April, or it was May 4th, 2011. And it wasn't until October that year when the iPhone 4S came out, right? So
correct.
Yeah. I hadn't had this phone for a full year. So I didn't buy a new phone when it came out. You know, I had a job. They asked us at the Apple store, I don't know if it was sanctioned or not, but like if we were going to buy the 4S, what color and carrier and everything.
So you started 4S, working at the Apple store in 2011.
Yeah.
Okay.
The white iPhone for the 4S came out at launch. So it was kind of no longer special, and it was actually everywhere because now everyone could buy that, and non-Verizon as well, not just AT&T in the US. So I said, no, I'm not going to do the 4, I'm not going to do the 4S. So the keynote, Siri was the big thing. And I think I mentioned the show before, but I what I couldn't get out of my head was, how would I use Siri if I had Siri on the phone? I was a big voice control user on the Samsung Android phone that I had, especially something like Navigate Home in Google Maps. It's like you tap a button, like maybe like a UI button in Map Search, and like that's what you say, and then it works.
Yeah, they had like dictation. Yeah.
And it worked, you know, you could get directions home like that, but it wasn't like Siri. And then iPhone had what they call voice control, and before Siri, not the new, you know, really powerful voice control. But you could do things, it was a pretty limited set of actions that you could do, but then Siri was like a bunch of things. And then the idea there was that it could expand to be even more things. And I couldn't get the idea out of my head of every night I set an alarm clock on my phone for the next day when I'm working. And so, it's repetitive and is a different time. So it's, you know, it requires action. I can't just have it set to the same time every day. And so I just kept picturing myself, like when I go to bed, man, if I had Siri on the 4S, I would just tell it to set my alarm clock and it would be so good. It was like that one, that single thing. So then I discovered the world of, well, you can sell the old phone for a lot of the money that you paid for it and then put that toward the new phone. So I did. And it had
you're doing the Tim Cook iPhone sales strategy in 2011.
Yeah, it had to be before the end of 2011. I probably made it through like October, and then like it was like in November when I bought it.
Did you get some boosted trading value?
And also, I had just purchased my first television on my own, because at Sears, I could never afford the televisions I was selling. And so I was in a better situation at the Apple store. And so I finally wanted to treat myself to the thing I could never have at the old job. And so it's like, I'm not going to do a 4S. I just got a new TV. This phone's from this year. It'd be crazy to do it. I've got the white one, so it's already looks like the 4S. And, I did. I sold the iPhone 4 for the 4S. And then every year after that, I had the iPhone 5 in slate because, you know, I'd had the white phone before. And now I wanted to get the dark colored phone. So it was slate, which is like this like dark navy blue kind of color that chipped really bad before Space Gray. And then the iPhone 5S came about. And the iPhone 5, like that was a huge deal. So you didn't get to experience that. But for me, like I worked at an Apple store, but I had that day off for launch. And I queued up to get in line for it. And, you know, you had like a little card with your color choice and carrier and storage size and everything.
The iPhone 5 must have been like the height of the big long lines.
Yeah, I think 5S, they didn't even do those. Like
the 5S was definitely when they started like doing the, you know, the getting the reservation times and stuff. So they started trying to trim the line down.
Yeah. It was something where they didn't do a pre-order for one of the iPhone cycles. So it made it like the line looks even bigger. Might have been that year. But for the 5, I had to have it. It was a bigger screen, and that was the whole thing. It was like the iPhone screen size is smaller than all the Android phones, and then you know, so go from 3.5 inches to 5 inches, or 3.5 inches to 4 inches diagonally was a big deal, and it was 6.9, even if it wasn't phablet size. Like,
yeah, and it
Samsung
was still smaller
was
than most of the Android phones.
Yeah, yeah, and the kind of like point was, we're gonna make the screen not a whole new screen, but make it taller, and then you get more content on the screen, and you can still reach everything with one hand. And it's thinner, you know. It's a really, really big upgrade. Even if you had the 4S, and the 4S by then was just like really tired because it was the 4, but the same again. And people were waiting for the 5 when the 4S came, and they thought that we'd get something massively new every year, and not speed boost and camera improvements and Siri. But yeah, I had the 5 waiting in line for it, and I remember. You know, I got there at like midnight, and it was like totally dark, of course. And I had a lawn chair or a beach chair, and listening to, I think I was like listening to like the probably the talk show, and John Gruber had Jim Dalrymple on, and I was like, oh man, these are like the two heavy hitters, and they're together, and they're talking about Apple on this launch night, and I'm in line for this thing, and they had review units already, so they could talk about it, and it was just like the perfect experience, you know, before 9-to-5 Mac and all that stuff, and for me as an employee, and when I finally got like the sun had come up, we were in the Apple store. You know, open for business, and you know they've got the phone there for you because you had your card in your hand for it. And I remember like going to you know the Time iBooks app and just like, whoa, you really can see more on the screen. Like there's more words on this page of the book than that page. Like this is remarkable. And they had like all new wallpapers, and it just really looked really good to me. And it was incredible. That's 2012. You go to for the, and I have the 5S, you go to the 5S, 2013. If you go to 2013, we both work at 9-to-5 Mac by now. And,
yeah, you like properly, and me, I was still kind of like half in, half out at that time.
Yeah. And, I was not attending WWDC that year, but I think I joined in like April, and then you've got May, and then by June I was at WWDC, or I was at San Francisco as WWDC DC was going on. And I was sharing a hotel room with Mark Gurman, and we'd been friends for a while online, but this was the first time we met in person and shared a room and everything. But, and that was really neat because we just looked like we, you know, you and I have never met actually, you know, because of the UK and the US. But, with meeting Mark, it was like we just picked up where we left off on like our conversation, you know, from online. And we'd done like FaceTime and stuff like that too. So it was neat, but, it was the iOS 7 keynote. That, you know, Mark had the massive scoop on my like plane ride. I got on a plane from Fort Lauderdale and there was not an iOS 7 leak. And then I got off the plane in San Francisco and there was the iOS 7 leak. And Michael Stieber, who was with us still, you know, these amazing, what John Gruber called like a sketch artist, class icon drawings of like what iOS 7 will look like because we couldn't run the actual pictures that we, you know, were received. And it was just like, man, one plane ride and it's all blown out there now.
Yeah, and of course the sketches were perfectly accurate.
Yeah, it's insane. Then Mark was like showing me on his MacBook Pro, like all his like folder of research and everything. And I was like, man, this guy's something. But, after the keynote, iOS 7 was very white and it was just like, you know, now you got dark mode and like it's dark mode everything. But at the time it was like, iOS 7 is like stark, like it's very white. At least the stock stuff before all the updates came out. And so I was dumb, but I had the iPhone 5 and Slate, and I was like, well, this new OS, it looks really white. I want a white iPhone to go with this. So I went to the Apple store in San Francisco and bought a second iPhone. And I think I might have sold the iPhone 5. This is like the beginning of like stupid choices with buying stupid things. But I came home with two iPhones at the time. And it was like Mark made fun of me for years for like you bought a different color iPhone because of the OS, like, you know. And then from then on, like I never missed a phone even if I tried to. So here we are. The modern stuff, like you said, it's not too much to run through.
Yeah, because for 2013, I posted I think like. 7 things total on 95 Mac. I was like really timid at the start.
Yeah.
But by like 2014, both me and you were like well embedded in. And so from then on, you know, for the most part, anything that was brand new, we would get like day one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We were making money. Yeah. Is the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We find it. We had intent, interest, will, and freedom to do it. So mm-hmm. like yep. The Apple Watch was obviously 2015. And I. Rarely for me, I actually bought two Apple Watches on the same day just because the black one was the color I wanted, but that was shipping a week later and I really wanted it on day one, and so I actually bought the white and the black the black Apple Watch the space gray and the silver sport watches, and then I returned the white one like a week later. But that's like the only time I think I've done that. But I just love like the Apple Watch was like so cool to me. Like I didn't know if it was going to be any good or any use or of any utility, but I was just like this is cool. So
yeah,
I wanted the black one, but I also wanted it on day one, so I actually for a week had the white one. And so that was actually, I said earlier that I have never owned a white Apple product. That was my white Apple product.
Oh, the silver Apple Watch. Silver. It wasn't even really white, but
yeah, it was kind of white
because the band was white. Yeah,
the white band. Yeah, yeah. And then obviously the HomePod. Everyone else was saying was stupid apart from us on the Happy Hour podcast. And we bought HomePods on day one and AirPods I got on day one. And I think, you know, there hasn't been a major product that I've skipped since that time. Obviously, like the different generations, I haven't always, you know, I don't upgrade Macs every year or as frequently as you or like AirPods Pro I don't have. But like all the big stuff, we all, like me and you both got like day one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's the funny thing there. Like with the Macs, once I was, so at Sears and when I was in college, I was making no money. Like it was a commission job and I had, you know, to pay for college on my own and everything. And it was really hard. And, going to the Apple store, I made more money than I did at Sears. And then there was the whole, John Brower situation where the New York Times kept running story after story about like bad working environments, which really wasn't, I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't Apple standards. Like I guess they were dropping. So there's this big pay raise that went around and then it was making even more money at the Apple store. And, you know, now it's like modest, but like at the time it was like, man. So there were things I could do. Like I want to try the iMac. So like I purchased an iMac and I was like, this, it's not for me. It's too big for my desk. And it was like the 21 and a half inch version. You know, and so I sent that back and then I tried the Mac Mini. The Mac Mini came after I had a MacBook Air. The reason I got a MacBook Air is because with the iPad 2, I thought with my iPad, with my MacBook Pro, I don't really need a Mac anymore. I can do everything on the iPad, which was not the case for a while. But it's in the MacBook Pro is in the family, you know, just gave it to somebody else. But then I did an employee discount, got a souped up MacBook Air, docked it. When this is like beginning with 9-to-5 Mac, I had a monitor for it and a keyboard and a mouse, and I docked it every day. And then I was like, well, I've got this whole desktop set up, so why don't I get the Mac Mini? So that was like the desktop, like the working thing, and the MacBook Air was like the portable thing. And that like really began the whole, you know, try everything out and just like experiment because it's possible too. And, you know, when the Apple Watch came out, you know, that's when this podcast kind of really kicked off.
Yeah.
We had episodes in this feed where you were a guest and I was a guest and Dom was hosting and Seth Weintraub, the publisher who's made all this possible for us, was hosting and Mark was on.
Mark would turn up from time to time.
Yeah, Mark would be on. Talk about scoops. And so we had like iWatch stories, you know, at the time. And it was like our expectations. And I think there's the Apple Watch event and we got to talk about that. But then there was this 6-month gap between the event and the product coming out. So it was a lot of hype for it. You know, like the first new product category under Tim Cook, you know, it was a huge deal. And then the 12-inch MacBook came around at the same time. So like then it was neat. Like I was married and have a stepdaughter and, you know, in her eyes, I'm like her dad, and in my eyes, she's like my daughter, and it's like, that's how it is. And, you know, it's like making me nostalgic, but like, this is like the 2015. Yeah. So then, I got the 12-inch MacBook when it came out, but I got two, one for me and one for my wife. And then I bought both of us Apple Watches as well, and not the aluminum ones, but I wanted the stainless steel ones. And we had, two different sizes, but I think both silver, stainless steel. And, you know, I used that the first year is just like, see what you do with it, you know, and alerts and everything. But it wasn't until a year after it was out, because I think it didn't have like 18 months in the market before it was updated. It was in that last 6 months or so where I really started picking up on the fitness features, and it changed the way I see it. And then, you know, every year I've had one since then because of just what more can you pull out of it and do with it? Yeah. And then with HomePod, it's like, you know, the thing there is it was delayed. So, we're on a trip with my wife for her birthday weekend, which was like time away, you know, but the HomePod came out on that Friday that we were driving. And so like part of the trip was I'm going to stop and buy the HomePod. And,
I remember because you set it up in that hotel on that like desk. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it sounded terrible because of like the surface and echo in the bathroom. I mean, it's not a good environment for a HomePod, especially glass desk, but by a big window. But once I got back home, then it was like proper HomePod experience. But man, yeah, it was different. And then I've had the AirPods. Like before the AirPods were out, I would use like $40, $30 Bluetooth earphones with a cord between the two. To sync with, to use with the watch, you know, to go and exercise with. And then the AirPods came out, and man, it's like, these are magic. And they were, you know, for 2 years. And then they came out with the new ones. And I was like, well, these have worn out the battery in them. So now I've got to get the new AirPods. That was earlier this year, like instant purchase. And then PowerBeats Pro come out, and we had the story early, and I get a review unit of those. And it was really cool. But then I actually paid for some of those too, like to gift them to other people and have my own pair. But, then the AirPods Pro come out and I get those. So for me, I've, you know, every step is like, it's a lot of, because of 9-to-5 Mac, I can both afford it and justify it, you know, because I can bring something to the podcast or the site for, you know, from having the experience.
And luckily, for the most part, Apple makes good products. So
that's true.
It's always a bonus.
That's true. Yeah. Man, we are fortunate though. Like,
yeah.
I can't express enough how, you know, the start of the year or the start of the decade is like, can I'm just amazed to have someone in the family help me out with getting access to this stuff. And it's just like incredible. And then at the end of the decade, it's like, you know, I have to maintain that same level of appreciation because if not, then you kind of lose the perspective of what it's like for customers, really, you know. So, and it doesn't, like, tech podcasts don't help because it's so casual, but really, like, all this stuff we're talking about is remarkable on an individual level, you know. That's something. Let's spend a few minutes talking about some of the bigger stories from the decade year by year. So we can go quickly, but I'll let you sort of summarize, and sure. If I have anything to say, I'll jump in.
Yeah, because I'll be doing like a decade in review kind of post on the site where I'll probably go into a bit more detail on like nitty gritty specifics.
Yeah.
But just we got to cover some high level specifics because, you know,
it'd be a shame not to.
Some crazy stuff happens, and especially like this decade, jobs died. That was a huge deal. Like, so 2010, we already mentioned, you know, AirPlay, AirPrint, those continued and flourished over the decade. But that was also the year where they did the good MacBook Air, right? The 2010 MacBook Air, that was a product. And that was the product that has essentially continued without a design change all the way through to the modern day. It's been so well received that the MacBook Air today is very, very close to what the MacBook Air 2010 looked like with the addition of like Retina, right?
Like, yeah, they MacBook Air was like to compete with netbooks, and it was like more expensive than those, but it was like the portability was a thing. And netbooks were the thing that was a word that people used for these like super low end laptops before like Chromebooks and things. And it was like marketed as like the laptop of the future, you know. It was like sort of like the 12-inch MacBook was. And then there got to be a point like later in the decade where MacBook Air was once the future, and then now it looks old compared to newer things, you know. But it certainly did begin as like something out of the future. And then now it's had its return with the new version.
Yeah. And obviously, like, the crazy thing about 2010 is, like, it just feels so far apart. Like, that was the year Apple was having, like, the war on Flash. And then you had the IntelliGate scandal. Like, all of that stuff feels, like, so long ago. And yet, you know, that's where I started. I started covering, like, being interested in Apple, like, reading rumors with the iPad. And, you know, a lot of stuff happened that year.
And then
it rolled on to like 2011, and that was like the beginnings of iMessage and iCloud. And then of course Jobs had to resign, and then he died, you know, not soon after that. And like, it's hard for me to remember, like, because I already joined the ecosystem in like 2010. That was only like a year and a half of like the Jobsian Apple, right? Full stop.
Yeah.
And it's hard to really compare the two for me.
Yeah. I had like my own boot camp of catching up to speed with Apple's history and Steve Jobs, because like I knew the products before, like a lot of people who might not know that Steve Jobs was the CEO or that Tim Cook is the CEO now. I did not know Steve Jobs per se, but like I knew iPod and Mac. And it was when I got the Apple Store job in 2011. I was like, I want to know everything to be the best I can at this job. And I, you know, and that meant going back and watching keynotes. And I, you know, like every WWDC and every product event that was, you know, at the time pretty recent, you know, but it's just like you started to see the way he looked at products and the way he presented them and what he thought their purpose was and everything. It's just like, it was so relatable and different than how it could be. It was really just digestible, and the presentations could be, the topic could be dry, but the presentation was interesting because he cared about what he was talking about. And so I felt like, whoa, like, you know, this guy is good. And it was before I knew about like health issues and things. And so, you know, of course we follow the stories when there were health issues and when he gave up the CEO position and was just was chairman. And I remember the night was moving furniture in my grandparents' condo and going downstairs with a couch. And, you know, growing up, like my interest in just news in general comes from them. Like we'd always play CBS Evening News in the house, and it was on then. And I believe it was Scott Pelley who was anchoring and came in with the breaking news that Steve Jobs had passed away. And it's just like, you know, we all stopped and it's just like, whoa, you know. And at that time, I'm an Apple employee, you know, and I mentioned the show before, you know, that same story, and that we get to see the Johnny Ive led and Tim Cook led, sort of, honor
tribute
service.
Yeah. Concert yeah. thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. From the Apple store, like close the store down and watch that for an hour, live. But yeah, that's 2010. And man, like it was a dramatic year and just packed with, this is kind of where, you know, it's, you know, his death was in 2011, but like 2010 just had so much stuff coming out, you know, the iPad as a thing, and the iPhone 4 is like a way better version of the iPhone.
Yeah, and continues to be like the most iconic model, individual model of the iPhone for sure.
Yeah, you know, FaceTime that we take for granted now. We talked recently about how, you know, it used to be something way less than it is now. But it's all 2010, and that's kind of like, and then you mix in, you know, his unfortunate passing in the year later, and that's where you get into all this stuff with, like, you know, how are you going to match 2010 and like how much stuff happened then? That's a lot of pressure. Yeah. It's just a remarkable year of like, you know, a decade of work that went into that.
Yeah. And immediately, like, the eyes on Apple criticism, like, doubled down, because you had Siri come out, and obviously Jobs had been involved in the development of Siri, but, you know, Siri had problems and Jobs wasn't there to lead the company to defend it. So you got, you know, you continued criticism about that. It was like, if you think Siri is worse today, it was bad when it came out. Like, it was much more unreliable in 2011, much more. And you can make like the direct through line from Jobs resigning. It only took till the end of 2012 before you saw like the executive shakeups, with Forstall being kicked out. Like, everyone makes
Browett being kicked out.
Yeah, John Browley.
The Browett thing was that, the Ron Johnson, mm-hmm. prior to Steve's death, just resigned. Like, he was the first, he was who Jobs picked to create Apple Retail with him, and he just, I guess he'd had his run and he left, and then so there was like interim people in charge, but then so the Browett hire was a Tim Cook one, because there was a big period between Johnson leaving and then picking somebody. And then it just happened to be so bad that like they just threw it in there with the Forstall, you know, is out under Tim Cook's decision, you know.
Yeah, and people make jokes about like, this never would have happened if Steve Jobs was alive. If there's one thing that's true for, it's Forstall getting fired. Like,
yeah, it was
Forstall,
this guy.
And Jobs were such good friends, and they worked together on so much stuff so much so closely.
Yeah, Steve Jobs like picked Tim Cook to be the CEO. That's who he wanted to be the CEO. And he told him not to ever think about what Steve would do, to make, you know, how I'd make decisions, but make them the way that you would make them, because it's what he trusted him with. That's the reason he picked him. And it just had to build conflict with Forstall, who was much younger in the company. You know, but had, didn't he work at Next with Steve Jobs? Like,
yeah,
had time. So it wasn't like he was really young and like inexperienced, but it was just like also how relationships worked. Like, he was, you know, Forstall was like Steve's software guy.
Yeah. And there were rumors for like a long time that Jobs would like calm Forstall down when he would like Forstall and Ive wouldn't get along, right?
Yeah.
Even when Jobs was alive.
Forstall and Bob's Manfills wouldn't get along, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
hardware guy.
Yeah. And there were so many things like, you know, Ive wouldn't take meetings if Forstall was in the room and stuff. But like, and before, in the 2010 period, you'd have Jobs and Forstall, like, you know, sorting out the software side on their own. And then you'd have Jobs and Ive doing, you know, industrial design on their own, essentially. Mm-hmm. And when Jobs passed away, the friction between Ive and Forstall really like kicked up a notch, and you know, ultimately it seems like Ive was a big influence on getting Forstall kicked out of the company. And yes, Apple Maps was like the straw that broke the camel's back, and Forstall wouldn't sign the letter, blah blah blah, but mm-hmm. you know, I think as soon as Jobs was dead, like, Forstall wasn't going to be at Apple for the long term. Like, it just wasn't going to work. Like, Ive was getting annoyed with him, Mansfield was getting annoyed with him. The undercurrent of that letter where they announced, you know, more collaboration than ever between the departments is, you know, one of the people that was keeping us separate is now gone.
Yeah.
And obviously, yeah. Forstall leaving then, you know, rockets you straight into like the iOS 7 era, which is like a whole other mess.
Yeah. It was like, looking back, it's comforting, because there was so much turmoil and change and just like uncertainty and drama, you know, that wasn't like a quarter long episode, but like, you know, quarter after quarter, like it wasn't going away and the pressure was mounting. And it took a lot of shifts to get to where we are now, or we can have more minor issues. But you don't see the same analysis of like, fire Tim Cook.
Yeah, know? I think like a good like way to describe it is that Apple today is like has far less volatility, right? Like, back, you know, Apple's size as a company has grown by, you know, double digits across the decade, and Apple's CEO originally was a lot more like trigger happy, you know, and emotional. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
you know, Apple today is much calmer, less volatile, you know, more careful before they do stuff. Like, they don't have the, you know, they still have, you know, innovation, but they don't have the kind of like whippersnapper element of them that the company definitely did.
And they could have made a bigger deal about, like, they made a big deal about the Apple Watch, but it took at least a version to get somewhere where it was worthy of.
Yeah, and like 2013, you had iOS 7. And there were people that hated iOS 7, me included, and there were people that liked iOS 7. But at least it showed that Apple could do something different, right? So there was a big flag in the ground for like Apple software has gone in a different direction, and you know everyone was hating on skeuomorphism, and the new thing definitely wasn't skeuomorphic. But all the analysts, all the investors, all the news sites were just like, "Where's the new product? Where's the new product?" Because Jobs had done the iPhone, three years later, he'd done the iPad. So now it was 2013. It was 3 years on, and there were no signs of a new product category in sight, right? And so they were just like, oh, Apple's only going to iterate. And do you remember, like, in 2014, Cook kept having to keep promising, like, they're going to announce a new product category next year, at the end of the year.
Yeah, it didn't come out that year.
Product category at the end of the year. And eventually that rolled into the Apple Watch, which was announced in September 2014, but obviously didn't ship till like April of 2015.
Yeah. Yeah. In 2013, you know, we mentioned in the iPad section of like our own iPads experience, but how the iPad 1 to 2 was such a big deal. And then there was the Mini involved, which I think the Mini's after Steve Jobs' death too, right? Like it's...
Yeah. The Mini was 2012, the first Mini.
That's a Tim Cook product, but it's, you know... It was also expensive compared to like what Amazon was doing with the really cheap tablets.
Well, and it was just like the iPad, but smaller, right? So it didn't really get the credit it deserved as like a completely separate item.
Yeah, and it quickly fell back. Like it matched in 1 year, and then it would fall back for a while. But the iPad Air was like, these are lessons learned from the Mini and techniques that we use on the Mini, and now we're going to bring it to the 9.7 inch iPad, and it made it so much more portable. I'm not an annual iPad upgrader, but I did go from iPad Air 2 to 4 to iPad or iPad 2, iPad 4, and then iPad Air because it was like, well, this is a big change in terms of how portable and everything it is. And that's, you know, it's one thing you can say about Tim Cook is like he has, you know, the iPad is like, it's a big deal to Steve Jobs too, just like the Mac was, but the iPad was like, you know, his thing. And Tim Cook definitely adopted the iPad as his thing too. And he'd say in the press, like that he uses it 80% of the time, you know, for work. And, you could have made a decision on the iPad based on sales that the thing for its time, but phones have gotten better and laptops have gotten more portable that you don't necessarily need to have the iPad. And like numbers were going down in every quarter when they were reporting numbers and there was no competition for it. So you could, you know, you could let go, but the iPad is certainly, you know, it's taken a long time, but under Tim Cook's leadership, there's been an investment in iPad, even if it's not what we want or think it could be, its full potential. It's definitely evolved, not just, you know, changed a little here and there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And 2014 is also when you start getting the first like undercurrents of the services machine. Because do you remember we talked about this like a couple of months ago where there was that report about how Tim Cook started steering the company towards like service initiatives as early as 2014?
Uh-huh.
Like, and 2014 was an Apple acquired Beats.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah, and they started even like doing stuff like iCloud Photo Library, which would again, you know, eventually turn into like hard monetization for iCloud subscriptions and all of that stuff was like the 2014 bit. Apple Pay was 2014 with the iPhone 6 because they did the 5S the year before, but you could only use it to unlock. And then 2014, they're like, now you can use the fingerprint to actually buy stuff. And
yeah, which is what people NFC. Wanted the first year.
Yeah, exactly.
It was real.
And then obviously in 2015, you actually did get Apple Music, which they obviously rebranded from the Beats Music that they'd acquired. The first version of Apple Music was very different to how Apple Music looks today. It definitely was wonky out the gate. They didn't get it right first time. They've definitely improved it. And I think if you look at the last, like, 2 years of Apple Music, they've invested far heavier than they did in, like, the first three.
Yeah.
Like, they've definitely grown that. Because basically Apple Music started as, like, we acquire these people from Beats, we use their technology, and then the people that make the music app, we'll just get them to, like, make this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And do you remember originally they were trying to do, like, what did they, Apple Music Connect with the fake Twitter feeds mm-hmm. and stuff inside of it? Mm-hmm. And that's been, like, redoubled. And as services become important revenue sector from them, they've actually, like, fleshed out proper leadership. Oliver Shusha, since Oliver Shusha took over, like, start of last year, I think, you've seen a lot more, like, aggressive push to, like, make Apple Music a straight competitor to Spotify and not just, like, a feature of the iPhone, right? Yeah. Like, they've done a lot. And that's what you've seen them, like, recreate with their other services too. Like, Apple Music didn't start like that, but what you've seen with, like, Arcade, they have a massive division working on, like, the game stuff. They have a massive division mm-hmm. working on the TV stuff. And they clearly learned their lesson. Like, music at the gate wasn't a hobby like Apple Music, but it wasn't like, it was closer to like iCloud Photo Library, like a feature of the phone, not like a standalone thing.
Yeah. Really. And at the time, like, so, you know, buying Beats also means that you got the Beats hardware. So there were more speakers than there are now, but there was also, you know, the big headphone market, that they were involved in. And so they got all that and it was a big question of like, do they care about that or the music stuff? And the answer is both, that they kept the headphones going. They could definitely do more in the speaker area, like release an AirPlay 2 speaker that was promised a few years ago, but they haven't done yet. But they've done a really good job with the headphones. But you know, I don't think they would have bought Apple Beats if it was just about, it was just headphones. Like, cause why would they? But in retrospect, it's clearly that Beats had recently acquired another service and then rebranded their service and built it out to be Beats Music, which was like this, you know, it was only a few months old whenever Apple bought it, you know, and Spotify was its own thing. But they buy Beats Music and they turn it into Apple Music, and then Beats Music eventually goes away.
And to this day remains their biggest acquisition at $3 billion.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a very serious part of things now. Like, it's just one of the services, but like, it's one of the services, you know, and not one of the experimental services really. So that was a big year, 2014.
Yeah. And then in 2015, you walked into 2015, and you also had like the iPad Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, again, like their first efforts to, because I feel like they kept talking about using the iPad as like a laptop replacement, but they didn't really give it the attention it needed in that like 2011 through 2014 period.
Yeah.
And the iPad Pro was really their first effort, like, you know, doing it properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you folded into the year after, and you had like, that was when they started doing like App Store subscriptions, which mm-hmm. is now a huge like target for them. They talk about it like every single quarter. They love selling their own subscriptions, but just as much they love selling other people's subscriptions. And if you look at services revenue, still the biggest part of it is money they make from other people, not, you know, money they're generating themselves from their own offerings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you get to 2016 and you've got AirPods, that's where I feel like when you've got the Apple Watch announcement in 2014, they made a huge deal about it. They wanted it to be seen as like the first Mac and the first iPhone, you know, the first Mac, the first iPod, the first iPhone. Like, here's the new thing, the Apple Watch, you know, and after the iPad. And they went back to the same place where the iMac was shown off. It was like they did this humongous splash. And then the Apple product didn't quite live up to it. But then with the AirPods, you know, they had trouble getting them out at first. But I think like looking back now, they clearly didn't know quite what they had there, you know, what they had there.
Yeah.
And if they would have known what it would become over the next, 3 years, then they, in hindsight, they'd have been like, you don't know what we've got. Like, this is tremendous. And it would have been this big thing. But it was very modest, and it wasn't a big splash.
Yeah. The first AirPods announcement was kind of like the AirPods to iPhone of the smart cover to the iPad.
Yeah.
It was like the accessory, because obviously that was the year they dropped the headphone jack, and they never said like, we want you to buy our proprietary AirPods, but that was the implication, was that we were going to wireless and Apple had the best wireless option that was there. But it was pretty clear that they didn't expect it to be so as popular as it has become, because you go and watch the iPhone 7 event and they don't pump it up as much as it's hard, because obviously they thought they were going to be popular, but not to the degree that they have. I don't think they, in 2016, I doubt they expected to start, like, they'd have, like, a product range where they'd be releasing two revisions to the AirPods in the same year, like, the second-gen AirPods and then AirPods Pro. Like, it seemed like they were taking it much more casually, and it took them by surprise, and then kicked into full force on it.
The big question then was how soon until, or it was, will these be in the box of a future iPhone, like the 10? That's the big thing about it. It was like, we treated them like the replacement for EarPods, not as this like just way better experience that's just different because of the form factor and reliability and portability and everything. It's a huge deal. And Tim Cook's own like phrasing for it was a cultural phenomenon. Like that's what was his surprise was like, they're everywhere. And it's like the original iPod advertising where your focus is the headphones. That's the sign of what you have. And then AirPods will like that again.
Yeah. And then like the spring of the next year was when they had the Mac Pro Roundtable.
Yeah.
So that was 2017.
Yeah, that's when the Mac Pro got announced, sort of vaguely.
And there was all that speculation of what did they mean by high-end and modular.
Yeah.
And
display.
If you look at, it definitely fits the bill, what they eventually shipped like last week. It's definitely high-end and it's definitely modular. And that was kind of like the start of them getting back on the track with the Mac a little bit, because we kind of like skipped over the whole 12-inch MacBook situation, which was a nice laptop, but it had the terrible keyboard on it, and then the keyboard went everywhere else.
And then 2016 like Touch Bar. MacBook Pros, yeah, it's like that, and they thought Touch Bar would be like the multi-touch or the mouse with the right. They made a big deal about that as like a big input too. That's another thing where they probably should have been more cautious about it,
because they were having the multiple generations of butterfly keyboard that were still unreliable, and that it was really that roundtable that started the putting them back on track there. And of course, it still took several years for them to actually, follow that through with the product changes. But that's definitely where it began. And then obviously the biggest thing of 2017 was the iPhone 10, right? Like, it was such a diversion. They'd gone for so many years with the same style, with the buttons and the big forehead and chin.
It felt like we'd been iPhone 6 revisions for years and years and years.
And it's going to be hard for them to top the iPhone 10, really. Like, it got a lot of like controversy because of the higher pricing, but just in terms of like the phone itself and the year-over-year changes, man, that was a good phone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, and still to this day, the gestures of the home indicator, they nailed that so well.
Yeah.
The first time around.
They've not had to try.
They did like four different things, but they've now basically copied what the iPhone's done. Like, Apple nailed UI wise, that's probably one of their best things the whole decade, just the home indicator gestures, because it was a huge elephantine task to be able to replace the physical home button and doing it well. And they delivered with those gestures.
Yeah, and they did a good job of spreading what iPhone 10 was throughout the lineup without doing it all at one time. And people were hesitant to go to iPhone 10 that loved the other versions. Just think about this. Like, you had the iPhone 1, and then you had the different phone on the 3G and 3GS that was kind of not as nice. and then you got the iPhone 4, which is just remarkable. And the 4S is a revision to that. And then there's a form factor change to the 5 and 5S. And then there's a form factor change to the 6 and 6 Plus. But then we go to that body for 6, 6 Plus, 7, and 8. Luckily, you don't have to count 8 because you could buy the 10 by then, but they still made it and sold it. With the 10, they've been even more aggressive with changing up things about the phones. And we can look at the rumors and see that they're going to continue doing that. So you had the 10 that year, and then the next year you had the 10S and 10X Max. So now you can get a bigger version of the 10. And then you get the 10R, which is like the affordable version of that. And then this year, the 10R replacement, like, it was a big surprise, but like the 10R replacement is even better than the 10. Like the 10R was. Like, you go to the iPhone 11, it's like, it's actually like cheaper to buy and better than the 10R was. And then we look at the future and it's like, you probably will have new form factors next year in some way, whether, you know, it's the rumor that the iPhone 10 screen size gets smaller and the Max gets even bigger.
And maybe looks a bit like the iPhone 4.
Yeah.
All the way back to 2010.
I mean, that's a serious redesign if you do that. You know, you won't mistake the phone generation. And then the 11 replacement going to OLED. So, we're not repeating that pattern in from 6 to 6S, 7, 8, where it's like, man, you've got some good changes year to year, but why aren't you making changes like Android phone manufacturers are making? You know, I think they're all, you know, as much as they're back on track with the Mac, they're back on track with like appreciating that the way the iPhone looks is also a part of it, not just what it does.
Yeah, and like the bezel design was so outdated.
It was bad.
6S, 7 years. Yeah. Like, it feels like they missed a bigger jump somewhere in around that place, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know. Maybe they did plan it and then it got pushed back or something, or they just never thought
it wasn't their approach, right?
Yeah, it definitely feels like a black mark of like the iPhone timeframe. Like, either the 6S or the 7 should have been more substantial than what it was, looking back.
Yeah, 6S would have been fine. It was what they were doing for years. And then the 7 was like, this again, minus the headphone jack? You know, it's weird.
Yeah, that was definitely a weird wonkiness. Mm-hmm. And straight after the iPhone 10, you ran into the battery gate madness, which lasted like the whole of 2018 because they had to run the battery replacement program for the whole year.
Yeah,
but this is why I brought this up, is what do you think was like Apple's worst scandal of the decade? Like, I still think AntennaGate might have been a bigger PR mess for them than even the battery stuff.
They had to give out free bumpers, free cases for that. You know, they had an app for that.
like obviously, Apple in 2010 was way smaller than what they were in 2018. Mm-hmm. So on a financial basis, I'm sure they ended up having to pay out more money from having.
It's a bigger deal that your phone can't keep a phone call than it is that your phone can last not as long as you expect it to.
Yeah,
it gets slowed down some. You know.
Definitely relative to the size of the company, uh-huh. AntennaGate was way bigger than anything else, I think, across all of the 10 years that we've like summarized over. I can't think of any scandals that reached the level of AntennaGate
and did. And they've always had these sort of scandals that, you know, like you call them, about different things of like bugs in the software and like how it affects location and things like that. Like, I remember one of my first software updates on the iPhone 4 was to fix a location problem. Like, you know, it was some scandal about location sharing and like without permission and things. So I forget specifically, but there's been tons of those. And there were some, you know, in the earlier years about contacts and how like Path was using contacts and things and all that kind of stuff. But AntennaGate for sure. And that was, I mean, you know, AntennaGate comes from the Nixon Watergate investigation and impeachment. And like, that's where you get the gate from. But there's been follow-ups to that since then with like BendGate with the iPhone 6 and different things, but I don't think you had a gate like that before for the iPhone before AntennaGate.
Yeah, that was like, it's kind of crazy that their biggest like public problem happened at the very, very start of the decade. And then everything else has definitely been smaller.
Yeah, like, maybe Maps.
AntennaGate overshadows everything.
Yeah, and that's hardware. If you had to pick a software one, it would be Maps, and that's like a management situation where they replace Google Maps with an inferior product at the time.
But you could just go and download like the Maps app, the Google Maps app after.
Well, you could do the months for it to come out. But. Yeah, you could do other apps, or you could do Google Maps on the web. But then eventually they made the Google Maps app that wasn't built-in map. But yeah, I guess AntennaGate, yeah. Maps is a big one for me because I was using the products then, so that stands out to me more, I think. But even more than Battergate, because I guess then I've got like more context on everything. But yeah, definitely Nintendo is a big one. Yeah.
2018, you had the HomePod debut.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we said in our like original podcast about the HomePod the day it came out still stands up to this day. Like,
yeah, I'm fine.
We sung its praises, and then we also highlighted like all the areas where it needs to get better, and they've addressed some of those areas, but there's still plenty of stuff for them to check off the list.
Yeah, I think because of what the Apple Watch was, everyone's sort of review of that and take on it changes over time and like what the product becomes. And it's gone in the right direction. But like my first Apple Watch review is not what I would write about an Apple Watch now. You know, it's just not. But the HomePod, there's only been one, so that helps. That hasn't changed. But I don't feel like we didn't see what they were going for, or that we missed that they might not press the gas on this product. And both things are true, that it's good for what it does. It can do more and ought to, but, and that they're not pushing features out left and right, but that if, you know, if you like what it does, then it's good for what it does, you know, and they've improved the price a little bit and sales help with that.
Mm-hmm. And also I think in 2018, like the kind of fever around smart speakers was just like, kind of was like its peak almost. Well, I kind of feel like it died down a little bit.
When they announced HomePod, you had Amazon Echo as the smart voice assistant, and you had Sonos speakers as like the multi-room audio speakers that had good sound quality. And Echoes were way worse then. They're not great now, but they've got versions that are better. And it was meant to be like you put those two things together and you have HomePod. This is the first smart speaker with great sound. And then it happened to be that they missed their launch date and that things did come out, you know, Echo sounded better. Sonos got voice assistance, you know, and
it took them even longer to do ship AirPlay 2.
Yeah.
Room stuff.
Yeah. 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 Tough launch.
It definitely would have had a bigger splash if they'd have hit everything for like the holiday period of 2017, which is what they were originally hoping for.
Yeah. I bought a bunch over time at launch because I was really into this and I still am. I wish they did more with what it does. You know, and a lot of it is just to make Siri do more things and then it will go there too. But, this.
Yeah. And in 2018, remember they hired, John Giandre to lead machine learning in Siri.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a lot of hope there, but we haven't really seen anything concrete come out.
The report that he's focused more on, like, big goals and not features.
Yeah, like long term AI.
That seems to be true.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately we're still kind of waiting for them to like come on stage and be like, here's the really 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 better Siri. Yeah. Right, like, mm-hmm. That's what everyone's waiting for them to say and to announce, and the years keep ticking by and it just doesn't keep happening.
Yeah, by the way, we don't have any notes here, but I don't want to not mention Project Titan and this years-long story about Apple not just like maybe making a car or something, but like there's a Project Titan where they're working on maybe a car, maybe an autonomous vehicle, definitely like an electric vehicle that's not, you know, fuel powered.
Yeah, and the rumors for that were like the proper rumors for that started with the Wall Street Journal in 2015.
Who said that it would be out as soon as 2020, and then here we are, and it's like, we don't know, we still don't know what this is, if they're even...
Yeah, and then Mark at Bloomberg followed up in like end of 2017 that Apple had scaled back the project. They'd basically like fired all their hardware design people and they were focusing on quote-unquote autonomous systems only. So essentially the software stack.
Yeah, and then through this decade, like you do have CarPlay. You did have iPod integration before that, but then there was iOS, there was Siri Ice Free, which was like a better version of Siri integration over Bluetooth, and then there's CarPlay, and then that's matured and become a better feature and it's in way more places. But that's been the car story for the decade, is, you know, and then these rumors and acquisitions and hirings and firings and laying off, they're on the background, and that maybe in this next decade we see some product of all of that, you know, maybe.
Yeah, we still they definitely haven't like canceled and scrapped it. They're still doing autonomous research, but they're obviously not close to launching like an actual car. So it's kind of unclear what their goal is there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the kind of AR glasses have kind of taken over as like
the now closer goal.
Yeah. the now closer new category rather than the car. Mm-hmm. It feels like the glass is going to come out first now in some form. And then obviously in the end of 2018, you had the Apple Watch Series 4, fantastic revision to the Apple Watch design.
Nice one, yeah.
Yeah, you had the 2018 iPad Pro as well. That was a, it was 2018 was a good year for them, like revamping the things they already had with nice, pretty exteriors.
Uh-huh. Including like iOS 12. You know,
yeah.
Was...
yeah, like the whole bugginess situation is a, I think that's a story that just never ends.
Yeah, we're back there again now. Yeah.
We're back there again now with iOS 13 being not great on the stability front, at least in the first couple of revisions.
I wonder if Apple like made it easier to go backwards. If then we could analyze that more as like it's so bad that not only do you not upgrade or buy the new phone because of the software, but that you've got the option to go to iOS 12 and you give up new features for stability and performance, and they make it hard to go back. And on new hardware, you can't go back at all. So I wonder if you could go back if they'd be like, you know, it's rough, but is it so bad that you don't go back? Because it can be like the Mac situation is rough, but is it better or worse than alternative operating systems? I wonder what that would look like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just don't get the option.
No, you just have to live with it or not upgrade in the first place. So.
And now it's like fingers crossed for iOS 14 where they're trying this new design process thing with it, and we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah.
And that brings us to this year. And I kind of feel like overall, 2019 was pretty like perfunctory for them. They kind of just, you know, rolled with the punches, not doing anything too overly dramatic. They cancelled AirPower in this year. That was sad. But they started the year like on a downer because they missed their financial results.
Yeah, it's like January.
First time in, like, 13 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was like the January period. That's when we had the big push for trading your iPhone XR and all that, you know, iPhone XR from 740, from 3499 with trade-in. Blah, 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 blah. But they definitely recovered from that pretty sharpish. Just like people kind of got bored of talking about it, and their sales definitely recovered, at least through to now for the rest of the year. And people seem pretty optimistic about iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro sales.
They've stopped sharing as much information this year.
Yeah, they don't tell you unit sales anymore, which does help people from like drawing the graphs that show it going downwards.
Yeah, and they never, like, over the decade we saw iPod sales stop. They didn't tell you by model, but they told you iPod sales, and that went away pretty early on in the decade, like around 2014, I think. iPod was just part of the other category, so it was like with accessories. And then we literally saw the iPod Classic go away because they said that they couldn't secure the parts and manufacture it for a reasonable price. We saw the iPod Nano and Shuffle get new colors, but not new versions. And then eventually they just went away. Those weren't a thing anymore. And now we're left with just the iPod Touch, which got an update this year, I want to say, or last year.
It was the iPod Touch got an update this year, yeah.
This year, so.
Yeah, because it got the A10 chip, so you can do group FaceTime and AR.
AR, yeah, and about one or two. But for the kids, but yeah, it, I mean, that's where iPod has gone. And it's like it was just the difference of what they sell, and the iPhone was a big part of that. I mean, the biggest part of that. But they never gave out watch numbers because they didn't have to, for one, but they were probably insecure about, you know, it would be massive at the start and then drop off quickly and then level out and then maybe even increase. And iPad numbers they did give out, but those were looking bad. Mac numbers they give out those. And then, and it was just that this year they just stopped giving out numbers for all of those categories, right?
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. The only thing they like tell you now is numbers of subscribers they have. It's like 400 million.
As long as they're good and going up, right?
As long as they're good, indeed. Yeah. And they don't tell you like specifics for TV or arcade and stuff.
Yeah. And Tim Cook would love, like, there's this quarterly requirement to give these reports, and the president is curious about, for the sake of the market, why not have these be every 6 months? And Tim Cook likes that idea because he doesn't like these quarterly reports. He likes to
say, what does he always call it? Was it the 90-day click?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So maybe that'll be a thing that happens in the next decade too, but it hasn't changed yet.
Obviously, we saw Johnny Ive retire this year. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been enough time to know the fallout of that yet. But
yeah, I found this video. Well, I didn't find it, but I rewatched this video of Steve Jobs talking to the company when he was like the interim CEO. And it was like, question and answer, just say, you know, I'm back now, or I'm here now at least, and this is how things will go. One question from a concerned employee at the time was like, what about the press, you know, the bad stories and everything? And one line he had is that, he's seeing a lot of stories at the time about people who left the company and like, oh my God, what will happen to Apple? But the way he said it is like, but they haven't worked in 7 years. They've just been here. So like nothing will change negatively. It'll only get better. And it's not that harsh, but you can make a comparison to that Johnny Ive that like around 2015.
That's when he got promoted to chief design officer.
Yeah. Which was like,
they clearly started to migrate out from there, and then mm-hmm. there was some weird bumps along the road where he came back in charge again for a little bit, and then he changed his mind again, yeah. And he started retiring again. Yeah,
but it's not that like, and it was, I think it was perceived that way. Like, no one's like, what are they going to do with that Johnny Ive now? Because we've seen the lack of involvement over the last 4 years. So
yeah, and you can't like discount it as being irrelevant, but it's not like a roadblock, really. Mm-hmm. Like.
It's
kind of have to see the course of the road. It's not like, it's kind of like if you're in a car, the road's kind of shifted a little bit. It's not like stopped in its tracks.
Yeah.
I don't know if that analogy works, but
okay. It works for me, you know. And I mean, CEO is different than designer, but the fact of the matter is like that Johnny defined the way products look and which can define how they work. And that's a big part of the appeal. And he was very close with Steve Jobs, like Scott Forstall. So he's not dead. He's starting his own thing. And Apple will use him, maybe in some way, they say. We don't know how, but...
They've designed some watch bands together.
Yeah. maybe. I mean, that's kind of like we talk about 2020, you know, this is coming up New Year. That's also a thing I want to, like, you know, pay attention to, and we obviously will. It's like, it's 2020 when he resurfaces, because we already know his plan, but we don't know any of the output yet. And so hopefully next year we start seeing that, especially as it relates to Apple.
Yeah, because if you still go today to lovefrom.com, it's just a purely white web page.
That might say the same always.
You think they're not even going to have a website? That'd be funny. And obviously... 2019 was also the launch of arcade and TV, and decent response. They definitely have work to do, and that will definitely be a storyline that heads into the next decade.
Yeah. I love the new MacBook Pro. We've got the Mac Pro for the people that are in that level and requirement, and it seems to be a good reception there. Like,
it only took him until like the last month of the decade to finally make people happy.
Yeah, a few things that we didn't mention is like in 2012 they had a revision to the Mac Pro that required a new label on the site for a few hours and it went away. 2013 they had a new Mac Pro and then they didn't update it until this year, and it was in 2017, like you mentioned, with the roundtable where they say that's not going to be around anymore. We can't make an update to that. And that machine now, you know, it was $3,000. They took away the base models and then just moved everything down the line to give you a better value for $3,000. But it was still like, you don't have Thunderbolt 3 there. It's like Thunderbolt 1 maybe, but it is with a different shape port. You know, it's mini display shaped and not USB-C shaped. So that was, I mean, that was a big part of the decade for like 2013 until 2019 to have that part of the thing be, you know, part of the story. And then another thing that we're looking at, you know, into the next year is, will they, you know, they had the Cinema display, they had the Thunderbolt display, and this is where it's, you know, go back to like my age and income and what I can afford, and like I've always wanted a nice Apple display, but there's never been a modern one that I can afford that's modern, you know.
Yeah,
like I can't do the XDR. That would be a bad choice. I would have to be saying no to many other things. And so, it's not like I love to make bad decisions about buying too much stuff with Apple, but that's not one that's even on the table.
Yeah, you can make a lot of bad decisions for the same price as on Pro Display XDR.
Yeah, make a lot of other people happy in the process. But, maybe next year we start to see less reliance on LG for this part of the market and then bring their own thing. It's not rumored, but we all want it.
We want a Pro display that is not XDR.
Yeah, and we'll see the new keyboard style appear, and eventually that'll be the end of the butterfly story. And it's for new customers. It'll still be there for years to come with existing customers, but there'll at least be a positive thing to point to. A friend of mine had a nice 2015 MacBook Pro, and it finally gave out this year. So, you know, you got 4 years out of it, 5 years out of it. And it would have been, it wasn't economical to replace it. It would require $750 or so to make it functional again. And he had a MacBook Air. We worked together at the Apple store that he got the discount on, and it was like souped up MacBook Air from 2013, 2014. And, he's like, I'm going to use this now because he doesn't need to use a Mac in the same way as he used to. And I was telling him, I was like, you didn't miss out on bad years, you know, and I wouldn't buy this MacBook Air yet. The only MacBook that you can really recommend right now is a 16 inch, and that's not what he needs. So it's like, man, that like spans a decade, but, next year, hopefully we start seeing that go away with new computers that are not those. And then, our time at N5 Mac, you know, goes on, but it's most of this decade, you know, like 2013 is a long time ago for us. There's only a few years on this list that doesn't include our time at N5 Mac. And most of that includes this podcast. And then this year includes the 9to5 Mac Watch Time podcast. So in all those years, and then I finally had a second idea, aside from the daily podcast that Chance inherited. But yeah, and that's just to say, like, thank you for everyone who's been with us all these years or just discovered this or this week. And this is like a history lesson. But it's such a cool experience to get together every week and talk about this stuff too, you know, like, whoa.
It's been a wild ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to keep going at it too. Watch Time comes back on January the 1st. And I've already arranged my interview. I know who it will be. You don't know yet, but it's going to be a good New Year's Day story.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, good for the New Year's resolution stuff. So,
so look out for my like write up post on this decade in Apple. Have a nice Christmas. Hopefully you have. Have a nice New Year, and we'll be back
on
with another episode of the Happy Hour podcast.
that's true. Yeah. And if people want to follow us, they can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach. That's APOLLOZAC. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at BZAMayo. Is that right?
BZAMayo.
I mean, I learned Zed through you, so I think a lot of people did. and if you have any feedback for the show, you know, you can DM us, you can send us a message on Twitter, you can send us an email at happyhour@nfmac.com. If you're new to the show, please subscribe. We come back every week. We don't miss Christmas. We'll have a new episode every week. And for everyone who's been a subscriber for so long, we are really grateful. So thanks for doing this with us. And see everybody next year. Bye.
Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.